So we're about to have a conversation with Carla Hayden. Dr. Carla Hayden, of course, was the CEO of the Enoch Pratt Free Library for 23 years.
23 years.
Almost 24, because we arrived at our jobs at the exact same moment.
And the city was really bustling, but also needed help and people to commit, and we're still there, and we're still here.
And we're still here. And now she's the incoming Librarian of Congress, which is, congratulations, Carla.
Well, I have to say that my work with people in the city of Baltimore enabled me to be nominated and to even be noticed. And there have been so many times during this process where I have talked about the Pratt Library, I've talked about Baltimore, and then the people who were involved in the process would prompt me. Who was Enoch Pratt? What happened during the unrest at Pennsylvania right. North?
The library stayed open.
They knew about that. And so I just will be forever grateful to the people of the city for that.
This is a silly question maybe, but we have to ask this question. I was thinking about this. I was thinking about you coming over today and thinking about that photo of you, I guess it was a couple of years ago, when you were at the White House and President Obama was leaned over and whispered something in your ear. And I said, did he whisper in your ear? Will you
no.
be the next Librarian of Congress?
No, he did not. He wanted to know how I was doing in Baltimore, and because we hadn't seen each other in a number of years. And he had nominated me to be on the Institute of Museum and Library Services Board.
Right.
And that came from my library work. And so this was an event that honored that group and other boards. And so he really was interested, I think, in what do you do in a city library.
So this library, the Library of Congress, that you're about to go into to become the new head, and it's a term of 10 years, right?
10-year term.
So it's the second largest library of its kind, right? I think the British Library is larger, 23 million volumes. Is that right?
Actually, 63 million.
63 million.
And I am now entering into a realm where I'm sure there's going to be discussion about which one is the largest. The Library of Congress has the largest collection in the world of materials. And so it is the nation's library. It serves Congress. It also coordinates and is responsible for the Copyright Office. A lot of people don't realize that aspect of it. And it also serves the congressional staff members as well.
Huh.
So the research that goes into legislation, that's why it was started. Thomas Jefferson and the
1802,
the new nation. They really needed to have materials that gave them some, hopefully, insight into issues and the background and everything about legislation. Here's a new nation. And so they were reading about all types of things. And Thomas Jefferson, who a little controversial sometimes for his personal, but definitely in terms of the intellectual, had amassed a wonderful collection, all kinds of languages, philosophy, everything. These are the things that legislators needed to study. And so when there was a fire that destroyed most of the early Library of Congress, Thomas Jefferson sold his collection to this nation.
So there are a lot of things I want to ask you about this. I mean, first of all, there's a huge difference, it seems to me, between running a system like the Pratt, which is one of the best systems in the country, public library systems in the country, and having a very kind of – because it's very personal. You're dealing with – communities and people coming in, a lot of working class people, poor people who use the system as a way to get through to find books and jobs and more. And it's a very – you're hands-on with human beings. This in some ways is so huge and maybe detached in a more intellectual kind of sense. So, it's a different leap, right?
And I definitely thought about that in terms of making a shift professionally, and I thought about my commitment to serving people. And how could I do that with a library that serves the nation?
Right.
And what I thought about was that little girl at Penn and North, 10 years old, and we're standing there with the double floors of windows looking out at the unrest. The library opened the next day, and she looked at me and said, "What's the matter?" And you realize that her world might have been restricted to that area, but she went downstairs and we got on the computer and we Googled some things and we started talking, and I could give her things. And I thought, if I could bring that same sense of opening up the world with the world's largest library to everyone, then I'm still serving people.
How do you do that?
Well, technology is a wonderful tool. Many of the collections in this, the first 23 presidents, their papers, and they were actually presidential libraries before Franklin Roosevelt, are housed and digitized at the Library of Congress. All of this interest in Hamilton and things, they have original pieces from him, letters and things. So what if you digitize a lot of that material and make it available via the internet to a child at Penn and North, someone on a reservation, and you know, and I think you definitely know with your experiences, that libraries on reservations are very limited.
Very limited.
And their computer access. But you allow the public to have access via technology to those treasures that are there. And that's what excited me, because people might not even realize that the Library of Congress has a life mask, and it's not a death mask, of Abraham Lincoln.
A life mask?
4 months before
him, when he was alive?
4 months before he was assassinated, he sat for a life mask, because he was very concerned about being represented fairly, and he sat for this, and they have this life mask. Now, what if you digitize that, make it 3D, people could change and look at it? Also, and this gets to the aspect of the hidden treasures in the Library of Congress. One of the librarians, and I hope that I have this experience, I think it was the 12th Librarian of Congress, was getting in the offices and things, and looked in a closet, pulled out an envelope, and it said, "A. Lincoln, last pocket." He opened it up, and now it's on display, the contents of Abraham Lincoln's coat when he was assassinated.
Wow.
Been tucked away. Now think of all the treasures that could be there, or that haven't been made available to the public that we could see. So that's what excited me.
So it must be, though, daunting on some levels. You've got, I mean, you brought the Enoch Pratt forward in your 23 years here in terms of digitization and bringing it to the new age and getting the library to use Nooks and people could check out computers and everything else to kind of do their work. And it was, you created a different place for to meet this age and also to help poor and working class people in Baltimore access that technology, right?
And access is what I'm hoping we can bring in this library for the country. So you go from the serving communities locally to serving the country via the communities and using the technology. So having the aspect of working with technology companies. There are a number of high-tech companies and also startup tech companies that would love to be involved with making sure that the collections are digitized and also helping make the access user-friendly. What can you see on a tablet? What can you do with these different things? And so I'm really looking forward to tapping into some of that expertise and saying, hey, if you were inventing the Library Live or LC for everyone, what would you do and how would you do it?
So, I mean, let me stay there. So what are your thoughts about? So, what are your thoughts about that? I mean, where do you see this going? I mean, this is a huge undertaking. A, you have to think about how you end up digitizing over these time you're there of all these millions of documents and art history.
Well, I think part of it is looking at and tying into what would be the priority in terms of some of the collections there, and separating digitizing collections that might have use that would be tied to curriculums, looking at what is the K through 12, or what are some of the common things, and what are some of the things that are in the collection that could be used. So looking at what and being somewhat forward about it too, what's in the popular culture, what are people interested in. The fact that you have 23 presidential collections, starting from George Washington. You have a presidential election. What about displaying the inaugural addresses from those collections of all 23 presidents with their hand notes on them? Wouldn't that be interesting to people? And what are the differences? So tying it in not just to what's the most fragile or what needs to be preserved, because sometimes that not gets confused, but
takes precedence over the other.
Right. And so that's a separate, that could be a separate track, but looking through the collection and saying, what are people interested in? And being almost rapid fire ready, if, you know, Hamilton surprised everyone, but there was a little time that you knew it was edging up. So what are people interested in, and what does the collection hold?
So is that, so none of that is digitized at the moment? Those 23.
Some of those things are. George Washington's papers are, and quite a few of the collections are digitized, but they might not, there might not be the interface or the way for the public to get to them easily.
So
that's the challenge.
So one of the critiques of the library over the years has been the fact that it has not been accessible to the public, that it hasn't had the digitization. So that's, I mean, I'm just kind of coming back to that just for a moment, because it's such a huge task. I mean, where you begin, what you look at, how you do that.
And that's the exciting part, though, tying it into what would people be interested in and why. So you might have several units, that one that's the education unit, that's looking at what are the curriculums, and then universities and colleges, what's going on in that arena. And then popular culture, how do you tie into what's trending? As soon as something's trending, boy, wouldn't it be cool if you could tie it into what the collections have. People may not realize that the library has a large collection of memorabilia from Bob Hope, the comedian. Okay? Right? What are they? Ira Gershwin. All of these popular culture, American culture figures are right there. Ralph Ellison. His personal library. Every copy of Invisible Man in different languages. This is a collection that's in a wonderful room with glass and everything. And I walked past and said, it says on the door, Ralph Ellison Meeting Room. Why is that? Well, because his collection is inside. Can we go in? Yes. And so making that, wouldn't that be something to really look at what Ralph Ellison collected in the books that he had in his personal library?
Oh, my God. Did you have a chance to look at that?
Not enough time.
I can't wait to hear more of that. Yeah,
but list the titles. Have them available.
Right. What did Ralph Ellison read?
What did he read? And so there's so many possibilities in tying into what people might want to know about or dig deeper into. Everybody could be a scholar. And I think that's one of the aspects. Everyone could read more about it or find out more about it. And so to have this resource there, I think it would help the nation to have.
So what does it mean that you, in all the years, you're the what? The
14th.
14th librarian of
Since Congress. 1802.
So, but you're the first librarian.
Well, actually, the
job, right?
Third. There were two other librarians of Congress that had public library experience. One was actually the head of the Boston Public Library. Another was the head of the Cleveland Public Library. So there have been librarians. And I think different times in the library's life, there's been a need for a librarian scholar to emphasize the scholarly nature of the collection. And I think at this point, it might be helpful to have a librarian that says, hey, let's build on this and make it accessible to many more people.
But you were also the first woman and first African-American to take this job.
Yes.
Given the way our institutions run by a lot of them by white men and the staffs, this is a huge step.
In fact, being a woman is actually one of the most startling because it is so different in a feminized profession, librarianship.
Right.
And so if you pull up on the website the photographs of the other librarians of Congress, it is going to be quite different to see my photo up there with that group, I must say. Not just the hairstyle, but it's all of that. So it's kind of fun to think about that.
So let me take a step backwards here for a moment. I'm thinking about this 23 years at the Pratt and where the Pratt was when you walked in and where it is today. And I should, as a disclaimer, I served on the Pratt board for a long time.
And we appreciated it, too. You brought a lot of spirit and really consideration about community services. And we still have the Community Services Committee and doing a lot with that. So thank you for that.
Oh, it was my pleasure to serve on the board. What you brought, there were a lot of controversies during the time you were there, from closing of libraries because of the budgetary issues and the way you revamped and changed the library. So talk about when you reflect on your tenure here for 23 years.
I think it really prepared me for the next challenge because the Annie Pratt Library was a library that was legendary among librarians.
Right.
And it was also a library that was different from other city libraries in that the people of the city had such a strong, strong affection for the library, and it made such a difference in their lives. You can go to other cities and you really don't hear people talking about their public library the way they did.
We all knew which branch we grew up in.
And by number.
By number.
Number 14.
14.
Right. And that's that really meant that the library helped so many people and that they felt this. And in a city that had racial challenges. I've heard so many older people of color telling me that the Pratt Library was the place that they felt at home in and helped open the world to them. And so that has kept me engaged and really kept me going in terms of making sure this library could help others the way I heard people tell me. So we'd have staff meetings, and you heard me say this at some board meetings, we'd have staff meetings where I'd start out saying, what will a young person now say 30 years from now about the Pratt Library? And that's what you keep in your head. What are we doing now that's going to make them say, boy, the Pratt Library really helped me?
What do you think your most challenging times were at the library? What were the hardest things for you at the library?
The closing of the libraries for fiscal reasons. And also to close them in a way that was fair. And I mentioned that. And what was equity? And so we really had to look beyond numbers and statistics. I had people that were very upset that, for instance, we weren't looking at just how many books were checked out and then saying, okay, take the bottom five. But we looked at more than that. And that brought out a lot of sometimes unpleasant comments from people. Well, they don't read. Look at their numbers. But it's not just how many books you check out. It's what is the library in a community. And you can't just look at that one measure. And so that was difficult because no librarian likes to close the library. That's number one. But we did it in a way that allowed us, it's similar to amputating almost, that you do it in a way that it you can build back again. And that's what we've been able to do.
One of the things of the Pratt, you became a very public person, and the library was always public, but you brought the public in and created programs and institutions inside the library that allowed the public to be part of it, which would be something very different from the Library of Congress if that happened there, right?
They have programming already.
Right.
But it's not as widely known or broadcast. So live at the library, C-SPAN, like Austin City Limits. I mean, you think about that. What if you have that? They have Stradivarius violins.
At the library?
Yes.
Really?
That have to be played once a year. And so they have an arrangement with Juilliard. But maybe you could have different conservatories. I'm really into that music department because that really has such an opportunity, I think, to broadcast. What about the films that each year are put into the registry? What if you have a film showing out in front on a lawn of the films that are selected each year to be put into a – there's a whole motion picture and recording aspect because of copyright. And so
– Oh, so let me get this straight. So everything – all copyrighted materials – in America, have to – there is a home – a copy of that has to be in the library. Is that correct?
Has to be deposited for record keeping.
Right.
And the library part can decide which items will be part of the collection. So the registering of the items – and I'm getting more familiar with what happens to some of the things that aren't going to the collections. I know donations are made to institutions and schools and things like that. So if the library doesn't keep material, there is a way to make sure that they're used. And so here you have 15. What about Oscar time when people are voting on that? What about playing and from the collection these films? And the songs and the Grammys and
just
and
the
all
research
of
being about the history of film in America is right there.
It's right there. And you have copies of it. So film showings and all types of things. So it can be a lot of fun to open up a treasure chest.
And that's what you're about to do.
That's what we're about to do.
So here's what we call it. One of the things I hope we'll do is we're now just about September. You begin in September, right after Labor Day, you begin this job.
Somewhere.
And you have to be sworn in.
Sworn
don't
in.
You? Right.
To serve.
Right.
And it is serving. And that's what really got me, too. I was asked to serve.
And you stood as up the and librarian said yes. Despite what you had to go through on Capitol Hill with the people.
That's part of service. That's part of service. And it makes you really aware of that, too, that people who are doing some of these jobs and taking these positions, they are serving. Sometimes they're giving up. They give up their privacy. They give up a lot of things.
So, and you equipped yourself well on the Hill, too. But I think that this is so exciting. I mean, this is, I think, for the country and for us, and seeing our dear friend Carla Hayden go off to the Library of Congress to be the leader of the Library of Congress.
And wait till they see what the Library of Congress has. I think that's what's going to be. What?
Yeah.
And so there will be a Twitter access, and we'll be tying that into just letting people know. For instance, all of the cataloging of materials, it would be interesting. 12,000 items are added to the collection every day.
Wow.
Wouldn't it be interesting to have a map and an app to say, okay, two books from Poland just got added, and you could, when you're a tourist and you come into that Jefferson building, there's a big map that's showing you in real time what's being cataloged and given a Library of Congress number. Simple things like that.
So sometime in January, after you really settled in, I'm going to come knocking on your door at the Library of Congress and come on over and see what's happening.
Oh, that would be fun.
And have a conversation about, okay, it's been like five,
and take
six
you
months.
Around.
Yeah. See, just what it feels like.
Take you around.
This is so exciting, Carla.
Oh, well, as I said, the Pratt Library made it possible, though.
Carla Hayden, 23 years she was our leader of the library here at Enoch Pratt Free Library, and during that time also served as the, what's the name of the group? National?
The American Library Association, president.
Was head of the American Library Association. in the midst of some very tough times when you you defended the right of privacy to library and not open access during our fear of terrorism and everything else was going on, and you stood up for that, which was not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
You and librarians in this country. And now you're taking that energy and spirit into the Library of Congress.
Librarians, and we had T-shirts made, Feisty Fighters for Freedom. Librarians, the original search engines.
Carla, congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to January.
Oh, yeah, me too. I can't wait to get down there. Carla Hayden, off to becoming the head of the Library of Congress.